This afternoon, we want to take a look as we continue to study about the kings of Israel. And one of the things as we're going through this, it gives us some historical background into the nation of Israel. And there's a comment by someone who mentioned that they really appreciated the study because they didn't know a lot about the history of Israel and the kings of Israel. And it's important to know. Israel has never been a perfect nation. As a matter of fact, most of the time of their existence, they have not relied on God the way that God had called them to rely on Him. And many times they are openly rebellious against Him. Yet, even as we were studying out of the book of Isaiah today in the adult Sunday school class, the Lord had promised that He would never desert them because He had given His word and His promises. And even though He would have every right to abandon them, He never would because His word had been given. And then we also looked at the verse we were looking at, and it said that through them was going to come a blessing. And the special blessing was the Messiah that would come through Israel. And this would come through the line of David, who was the first king that God had desired to have to rule Israel. Saul being the first king, but that's the one that the people wanted, not the one that necessarily God wanted. But it was through the line of David that the king would come. And we're going to be studying, and one of the things to look at as we study the various kings that ruled in Judah and also in the northern tribe of Israel, the tribes that made up the country of Israel, is to see that out of the southern tribes in the kingship in Jerusalem, through the tribe of Judah and through the line of David, would come the Messiah. And you're going to see as we do this study that there's a number of times that Satan tried to stop this line. And he tried to stop this from happening, that God would be a liar, but he never could. And so I trust that that will be an encouragement to you as we look at this. Plus, just seeing the issues that the nation of Israel, which became Judah and Israel after the Civil War, and after God divided the kingdom because of the rebellion of Solomon, that we will see that there are lessons that we need to learn from these people, too, of things that we do in our lives that are very similar to things that they did in rebellion against God, and also things we can do in our lives to be obedient to the Lord. Well, this afternoon, we're going to be looking in 1 Kings, and we're going to come to 1 Kings chapter 15. At the end of chapter 14, which we looked at, we just looked briefly at the last few verses. We really didn't dwell on them. But Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, died. Now, most of our study last week was done on about Rehoboam's son, who was Abijah. And Abijah, Abijam, rather, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, that's the son of Jeroboam. I'm getting my... There are... A lot of the names are very similar. We saw that the son of Rehoboam was Ahijah, was the son of Rehoboam. And he was sick, and we studied about Ahijah and how that he had died as God had said he would die. But we're also going to be taking a look at Rehoboam and his death tonight. So let's take a look beginning at chapter 15, beginning at verse 1. Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, reigned Abijam over Judah. 3 years reigned he in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maachah, the daughter of Absalom. And he walked in all the sins of his father, which he had done before him, and his heart was not perfect before the Lord his God, as the heart of David, his father. And I just want to report here the standard by which all the kings of Israel and Judah will be measured is David. And we talked about why that is, because David always trusted and worshiped the Lord only. He never turned to any other gods. He never turned away from the Lord, even though he sinned and did some things that were really bad when he sinned. He never quit worshiping God and trusting God and claiming that God was the only true and living God. He never allowed high places to be built. He never allowed false altars to be established. And so all of that was done during the succeeding king's reigns. And various of the good kings of Judah, what they did is oftentimes they would come to reign and they'd be compared as a king after their father, who ruled after the father David. But you'll see that they didn't rule as David ruled. Many of them would leave false altars in place. They wouldn't get rid of all the remnant of the false worship within the nation of Israel. And they would do various things that wouldn't make them the same type of individual that David was, even though they loved the Lord, trusted in the Lord, and ruled in the same line as David did as far as the way they ruled. They never did exactly what David did. He is always the standard of measure. And so we see here that the one who is ruling after Rehoboam in Judah was a man who ruled after his father, which did not do that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, and did not rule as his father David had done. And they'll always refer to David as the father of these kings, even though he would be their grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather, but he is always the one that's referred to as the standard and referred to as their father. Nevertheless, for David's sake, did the Lord, his God, give him a lamp in Jerusalem to set up his son after him and to establish Jerusalem. Now, what he's saying here is, even though he did not do what was right, he allowed the kingship to remain in Jerusalem under the line of David, and it was for David's sake, not for the kings that immediately followed David who didn't do what was right. Solomon, the wisest man in the world, didn't do that which was right in the eyes of the God, established the high places and the false centers of worship, and even began to worship the false gods of his many, many wives, and God judged him for that. And but he's still going to allow the light to remain in Jerusalem. That is, the throne will remain in Jerusalem, the line of David will remain in Jerusalem, and God has still made, as he has even today, Jerusalem the city that is his city. Now, because David did that which was right, in verse 5, in the eyes of the Lord, and turned not aside from anything that he commanded him all the days of his life, save only in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. And if you look there, you remember what that was? He had committed adultery with Bathsheba and killed Uriah, a righteous man. Had him killed in battle to cover up his sin of adultery, because Bathsheba had become pregnant, and it was Uriah had done nothing wrong. He was one of David's men, one of David's great men, and he was a man who was a Hittite, yet he had converted to follow the God, the true and the living God. And so he was a good man, and yet David killed him. And so he said he did everything that God told him to do except in that area. And there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. So as long as Rehoboam lived, he was fighting with Jeroboam. And we saw a little bit of that in the last studies that we've done, how that Jeroboam and Rehoboam warred. Rehoboam trying to get the 10 tribes to come back to him. And also Jeroboam fearing that Rehoboam would do that and warring against him. And then, as we saw in the last studies, Jeroboam turned the whole worship of God into a man-centered worship that he created, even though he copied God, which was inspired by Satan, because that's what Satan does all the time. Tries to copy what God has established. Only problem is he twists it and makes it a lie. And that's exactly what Jeroboam did. And there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. Now, the rest of the acts of Abijam and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? And there was war between Abijam and Jeroboam. And Abijam slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, reigned in his stead. Now, this is going to be one of the good kings of Israel, of Judah, rather, and that is Asa, his son. He is not going to be like his father or his grandfather or even his great-grandfather. And we don't have a whole lot about that we know about Asa, but we can see some of the things in the chapter that we're studying here in 1 Kings, chapter 15, and also we probably won't be able to look back at 2 Chronicles, but we'll probably do that on Wednesday night. We'll give you a little overview of Asa's reign here, and then give you a little more in-depth on Wednesday night. And in the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, reigned Asa over Judah. So Asa came to reign after Jeroboam had been 20 years. This would have been 20 years after great-grandfather Solomon had died, because that's when Jeroboam came into his rule. And so we see that it's 20 years after Jeroboam had come into rule that Asa rules. And Asa did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, as did David his father. And again, I mentioned David is not his immediate father, but he's referred to as his father because he's in the line of David. He's in the line of the Messiah. And he took away the Sodomites out of the land and removed all the idols of his fathers had made. Now, I want you to see two things that he did that were wonderful in the eyes of the Lord. The first thing is he took the Sodomites out of the land. It doesn't really tell us, as we've been going through the study, how the Sodomites got into the land and were given a position where they could openly flaunt their lifestyle, but that had been done in Judah. And this is an abomination to the Lord. Why is sodomy or homosexuality an abomination to the Lord? Today in our culture, we have a lot of people that say, well, people are just born that way. They don't have a choice. No, they're choices. You may have a tendency to do something, but you still choose. And the thing is, we have tendencies towards sins that become our sin of preference. And sodomy is one of those sins. And the causes of people becoming involved in this lifestyle can be various reasons for it. Some of them may have been drawn into it as a child through a horrendous experience that they had. Some of it may have been because of the family that they grew up in. Some of it may have been by being groomed by other homosexuals to have that type of lifestyle. But they are still choices. And God gives us the power to say no, and to say no to that lifestyle. And why is it an abomination in the eyes of the Lord? I want to tell you why it is. Because it's a direct attack on God's creation. And it's a direct attack on God as creator. If you go back and look at the beginning in the book of Genesis, and this is one reason why you see a number of churches that are becoming less biblically orientated, wanting to eliminate the first 11 chapters of Genesis. And they will also embrace the concept that is from the world that things came into being by evolution. And they may try to give it God terms, like things like progressive creationism or evolution that God established, where he basically put things in progress, wound up the clock, and then sat back and watched what was going to happen. These are the church trying to accommodate the world, but the Bible is very clear. God created. And if you go to first chapter of Genesis, you see that the word that is used for God's creation is ex nihilo, which means he created something out of nothing. In other words, there wasn't anything, yet he brought into existence that which we see and exists. And that can only be done by the power of creation. It cannot be done by evolution. With evolution, there is such a thing as microevolution. And that you will see in, for example, your body can have some microevolution going on where it makes adaptations due to outward influences on it, but you will always still be you. And humans will always be humans. But for example, there can be an adaptation. You see that, for example, colors of eyes, colors of skin, colors of hair, all of those are adaptations. They were all there initially when God created Adam and Eve. You look out here and I see different colors of skin, different colors of hair, different colors of eyes. All of the genetic code was there at the beginning for all of that. But there was adaptation that occurred. For example, those with darker skin typically come from areas where there's higher heat, and those with lighter or fairer colored skin typically come from colder climates. And it's because the human adapts, and those oftentimes that had a greater chance of survival may have had the various tones of skin that resulted in giving them a greater chance of survival. We also know that when at the Tower of Babel there was a scattering of the peoples, and it was due to languages. And people went where they could understand the people they were going with. And so consequently, they would go, and there would be the genetic pool would be made smaller as those people that spoke the same language went, and they intermarried and had children, and their genetic pool would grow smaller, so the variation would become less. So consequently, you will find in different portions of the world where you've had a group of people, and you can trace historically, they've been living there together for a long time. You'll see that genetically, they often have the same colors of skin, the same color of eyes, the same color of hair, the same type of hair, the same type of body structure. Why? Because they are intermarrying, and those become the genetic dominant traits, and the other ones become the recessive traits in that culture. Well, all of this has to do with God and His creation. It was all there at the beginning. It's just that it's because of what's happened through what we call microevolution, which means nothing really changed except different genes were emphasized within the culture. Well, we see here that as we look at what's happening here, all that we know that as God was being honored by His people, but they allowed things to come in which weren't according to His word. And there's no genetic proof of homosexuality. There can be, for example, with drug or alcohol abuse, you can have something that would make you more susceptible. Some people are more susceptible to being influenced by drugs than other people, but it doesn't make them an alcoholic. They can still choose not to drink. And so you can choose not to have this type of lifestyle. Why is it a direct attack? It's a direct attack because God established man and woman, and He established marriage, and He established children as being a blessing that would come out of that unity, so that man would be able to be part of the recreation of the next generation, if you would, the propitiation of that generation, and that those people that would be born could be trained within that family structure to learn about the Lord. That was God's perfect plan. You cannot genetically have two women or two men have a baby. And I don't care what they call a man or a woman. They can say a woman's a man and a man's a woman, but it doesn't change their genetic makeup and it doesn't change their abilities to conceive or not to conceive. And so that is God's plan. Satan attacks God's plan. He wants to destroy God's plan. So this is, the Sodomites is a direct attack upon the character of God, upon the creative hand of God, upon the authority of God. And Asa got all the Sodomites out of the land of Israel. And the other thing that you will see is another direct attack on God is when you adulterate his worship. Because then you change the God that you're worshiping. And that's what they've done. They established false centers of worship. They begin to establish and combine, much like much of the church today, where you see heresy coming into the church. It's not oftentimes a direct attack on the character of God, but they'll begin to try and introduce things to combine worldly philosophies and worldly gods, if you would, with the true and the living God to make him into a different God. That's what was happening in Israel. They would establish these centers of worship, and they would bring in the Syrian gods, and they'd say, well, our God isn't powerful enough to give us and guarantee that we're going to have a good crop this year, so we'll bring in the Syrian gods of fertility and establish altars to them, and just kind of as a secondary plan, in case God can't deliver, we'll worship the fertility gods of the Syrians. And we'll do the things that the Syrian gods tell them to do, or, which are really demons, in their worship, which are oftentimes involve forms of worship that were abomination to the Lord. Well, we see that Asa got rid of both of these two things. And he's the first king in Judah in three generations since David to do that. Every generation since David had added to it in one form or another. He is the first one to get rid of it all. That is why he is honored and said that he is a king after his father, David. He did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, as did David his father. And he took away the Sodomites out of the land and removed all the idols that his fathers had made. And also Michah, his mother, even her he removed from being queen, because she had made an idol in a grove, and Asa destroyed her idol and burnt it by the brook Kidron. And so a lot of people will make excuses. And I remember one of the things I was talking to someone one time, and they said, I don't understand, but this person seemed to be so strong on this issue, and all of a sudden they did a 180-degree turn, and now they're against it. And it would be an issue that was of great biblical importance. And as you examine why they did the turn, oftentimes it's because of their family. They didn't want to offend their family, so they wouldn't take a strong stand for biblical truth and instead compromise their position to allow their family not to get upset with them. Well, Asa's mother was involved in idol worship. He didn't go, well, we're going to get rid of all the idols except mom's. I'll let mom keep her idol. I'll let her keep her high grove. I'll let her continue with her worship because she, after all, she is my mom and I don't really want to offend her. But that's not what he did. Instead, he burned her idol and took down her altars just as he did everyone else. There was to be no exception simply because of relationship or simply because you had feelings for someone, didn't change God's truth. And oftentimes we allow our feelings to get in the way of God's truth, and we aren't to do that. Asa didn't do it. He was honored because of it. Even his mother, who worshipped a false god, stopped her worship as well. But the high places were not removed. Nevertheless, Asa's heart was perfect with the Lord all his days. And the high places would have been on the Mount of, I just lost the word. It's in Israel today, and they call it the It's where all of the high places were built. And on that mountain, he allowed some of these high places to remain. He tore down the altars, but the groves would have been still there. And he didn't cut them all down. But he said everything that he did was perfect in the eyes of the Lord. He did that which was honorable before the Lord. Well, that gives you an introduction into Asa and what he did. We'll just finish off the last verse here. And it says, and he brought in the things which his father had dedicated and the things which himself had dedicated into the house of the Lord, silver and gold and vessels. And so, you see that he tried to change the focus of the people. And that was part of the thing, responsibility of the king. Because if you remember when we started the study way back at the time of Solomon, we went back and looked in Deuteronomy and what God had said that when Israel would have a king, what that king was to do. First of all, he was to read all of the scriptures. That was to be his focus so that he would understand what his responsibilities in leading the people were. Secondly, he was to write them all out. Now, I don't know about you, but oftentimes you can read something, but if you read and write it, it gives you a greater remembrance of what you've just done. That's oftentimes when you are in school, you have the teacher, in the old days, when I went to school anyway, I don't know what they do now, but in the old days, the teacher would oftentimes write it on the board and show you and instruct you orally what was going on, and then he'd have you take the same principles, like for math, the problem that he just showed you on the board, he'd give you a bunch of those similar problems to take home, and you would do them and write them out yourself. Why was the purpose of that? Because you would both see, hear, and then write. It gave you a greater understanding, hopefully, of what you'd just been instructed in. Well, the reason the king was to write out the law of the Lord was so that he'd have a greater understanding of what he had just read. And it wouldn't leave him. And so Asa was instructed to do this. And Asa evidently took it to heart because he did many of the things that God's Word said. Getting rid of the occultic false centers of worship and getting rid of the Sodomites out of the land. And just as God's Word said that it should be done. And focusing the people on worshiping the Lord in the temple. Let's just close in prayer. Lord, I pray that you would just help us to understand and learn from the text this afternoon. Help us to understand as we begin to look at the life of Asa, a king that would rule for many years, and a king that did that which was right in your eyes, a king that honored you, even though his father and grandfather and great-grandfather had not, but David had. And Lord, I pray that you would just help us to follow after the heart of David and desire to worship you and do what was right in your eyes with our whole heart and soul and spirit and life. Go with us now, and this we'd ask in Jesus' name. Amen. In closing, if you would turn to 558. Thank you.